It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, some Native American words that have been adopted into English still retain their native associations. But there are many other words, especially for animals and different kinds of food, that have gone fully cross-cultural. This hour, we'll trace the origins of some of these words. Our English language expert, Patricia O'Connor, is here today. She's the author of Woe Is I and a number of other books about the English language. She also blogs at grammarphobia.com. And just last month, she received the 2016 Iowa Author Award from the Des Moines Public Library Foundation. Congratulations, Pat.
Well, thank you very much.
And thank you so much for being here today. And let's talk about these words, because as I just mentioned, I mean, some of these words are Native American words or you know, similar to Native American words.
Right.
And we use them in American English, and we assume that they are being used in the way that they were originally used.
Right. Right. They keep their associations with Native culture, words like moccasin and papoose and sachem for a chief, wampum, totem, tomahawk, and all those. But there are others that are totally mainstream, and a lot of people probably don't realize that they originated as American words. There are tree words like catalpa and tamarack. Now, I always assumed that those were European names, but they aren't. They're Native American.
Very interesting. We'll talk about a lot more of those words as the hour goes on, but I know you want to start with the word powwow.
Right. Powwow is a very interesting word, and I wanted to start with it as an example of a Native word that came into English right away as soon as the Europeans arrived, practically, and has lived on. And the interesting thing about powwow is that it Native Americans had lots of different languages, hundreds of them, maybe thousands. And the early settlers, of course, arrived in New England, so they picked up words from the Eastern Algonquian groups of Indians and the languages that they spoke. And largely, the earliest words recorded were from Narragansett. This was a tribe that lived in what's now Rhode Island, and they were very powerful tribe, very influential. They were the most dominant tribe of the Eastern United States for many years, and it was the Narragansetts, in fact, who sold the land to Roger Williams, who later created out of it the Provincetown settlement that later became the state of Rhode Island. And he was one of the early settlers who recorded the word powwow. But when it first came into English, it meant what it meant to the Narragansetts, which was a priest. That is, a shaman or a healer, what we might refer to as a medicine man or woman. Now, linguists believe that the literal meaning of powwow in the parent language, which was a very ancient Proto-Algonquian, was one who has visions or he who dreams. And when powwow first showed up in English writing in 1624, that's what it meant to the colonists. A powwow was a medicine man or a religious leader or a shaman or priest. But very soon, by the late 1630s, English speakers started using it in a different way, to mean a gathering or ceremony at which the powwow presides or is present. So a powwow came to mean a festival, a get-together, a meeting, a large meeting. And this was a meaning that the Native Americans, in turn, adopted. And the result is that today, among Native Americans, powwow has two meanings. Principally, it means what we think of it as, the cultural festival celebrating their traditional way of life with foods, dancing, songs, crafts, and so on. Lots of fun. But especially among tribes in the Northeast, it can still also mean a medicine man or woman.
So interesting, because it also, the word traveled from a specific tribe to American English speakers on the East Coast, and then spread around the nation. And
yes.
So it spread from English speakers to members of other tribes.
Yes. Well, that's part of it, yeah. Powwow came from Rhode Island, But because the Narragansetts were a powerful tribe, it spread to nearby tribes in the Northeast, even before white people arrived. The Massachusetts Indians used it, for example. And I think the Pequot and the Wampanoag also used it. Those were nearby tribes. And later in the 1600s, there was a very bloody war, sometimes referred to as King Philip's War, in which a lot of Narragansetts were wiped out. And the survivors were dispersed among other tribes, and some ended up as far west as Wisconsin. And the thinking is that they probably took many of their words along with them as they assimilated into these new tribes, and those words hence moved west, not only with white settlers and traders, but among Indian tribes, so that powwow entered other Native American languages that way. So as the frontier moved west, these words from Eastern Indian languages also moved west, largely through the influence of white traders and scholars, but also from the Indian peoples themselves. And it was estimated by one scholar that by 1880, at least 30 tribes in the West were organizing gatherings and festivals to which the public was invited, that they were increasingly calling powwows. I think that's quite interesting.
It is very interesting.
That moved. So moccasin, papoose, sachem for a chief, squaw meaning a woman, which is now considered a derogatory word, and wampum, which is kind of also derogatory. And words like that traveled west with traders and also with Indians
themselves. So they also took a similar pathway. And I can imagine as Native Americans who were further west encountered these traders, they might adopt the language that the traders thought. Of course, all Indians speak these languages or the same language. They would adopt those to make communication work.
The traders were they were smart enough to know that languages changed as they moved into different regions of the country. But they did help spread those earlier Indian words and introduce them to new tribes. They might have said, oh, you know, the Native Americans back in Ohio used the word muskrat for this or some, you know, that kind of thing. but anyway, lots of words now are pretty much cross-cultural, and we have words for animals like moose, opossum, abalone, caribou, raccoon, skunk, woodchuck, coyote, husky, and possibly chipmunk and muskrat. And we, probably a lot of listeners already know that words like kayak, canoe, and toboggan came from Native American languages, but they're used quite commonly in ordinary English. And there are lots of words for food and produce that we use: hominy, succotash, squash, pecan, persimmon, tomato, avocado, pone, as in corn pone, chili for the hot pepper, and I didn't know this until I found it out yesterday, sockeye for the salmon. I always wondered why sockeye salmon was called that. I thought maybe it was because the salmon had a huge eye and looked like it had been punched in the face, but that wasn't it. In the Indian word was sockeye, which meant fish of fishes, which it certainly is.
Well, and so many of those words we do just take for granted because they are part of American English, and we use them and never think about their origin.
Oh, yes, even part of British English.
And so can you look at each one of these words, if you wanted to, can you trace them back to the specific native language that they came from, or have they morphed so much over the years that maybe they're not that recognizable?
Yeah, most of them, you know, etymologists do know where most of them came from. And there are, although some of the Native American languages have gone extinct, like Narragansett, because they were those Indians were practically wiped out, there are efforts underway to revive some of these Native American languages and to teach them to children. And some of the languages are quite alive and well, like Meskwaki, which the Europeans at first referred to as fox, You hear that the Sac and Fox were the principal Indians in Iowa, but it's actually the Sac and Meskwaki. Sac, by the way, is referred to in other states as Sauk, S-U-A-U-K, S-A-U-K, Sauk. But it's the same thing, Sac. And the Sac and the Meskwaki spoke pretty much the same language, and they were friends and allies. So they shared between them as a new word was introduced to them, the other tribes knew it almost immediately. So usually words from the Sac and Meskwaki Indians will be referred to as from Sac and Meskwaki.
Interesting.
But I wanted to mention that some words that you might think are Native American are not really. For example, tom-tom. It's Hindustani. It originated in India, not in America. Another thing, a lot of people associate some kinds of pidgin speaking with Native Americans, but it didn't really happen. For example, Native Americans did not use the word heap adverbially, as in heap big. This was an invention of white writers, particularly Washington Irving, and it was perpetuated by Mark Twain as a way of characterizing the way they thought Native Americans spoke, or the way their readers would like to think Native Americans spoke.
Right, and that part of the story doesn't surprise me that much.
Yes.
So we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. We've been talking about Native American words that have been adopted and adapted in modern American English. If you have questions about some words that you maybe have never stopped to question before, give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Patricia O'Connor will also answer your questions, other questions about the English language. You can share your pet peeves as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Patricia O'Connor is the author of many books about the English language, including Woe Is I, and she blogs at grammarphobia.com. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our English language expert, Patricia O'Connor, is here today. We've been talking about Native American words that became part of modern American English, sometimes retaining their original meaning, sometimes not retaining their original meaning, and sometimes fully hybridized into American English, so we don't even question their origins at all. If you have questions for Patricia O'Connor, give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And you can talk about this specific kind of word or also ask questions, your other questions about the English language. And we've got Jim on the line in Spencer right now. Hi, Jim.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. I'm aware that a number of the words that the native speakers use have been altered a lot, probably because we can't get our lips around them or something, or, you know, we think it has to have some basis in Latin or something. But I was just curious to know if your guest had some examples of how we have, you know, messed up perfectly good words, trying to spell them and trying to read them.
All right, Jim, I'm sure that's a great question because I'm sure we did that.
Right. It was a challenge for the colonists and the pioneers to spell out the Native American words they were hearing, because they weren't really suited to the Roman alphabet many times. There were sounds that were hard to write out. So in a lot of cases, words became either abbreviated or they were spelled differently. I'll give you an example. The word Sioux, which is spelled S-I-O-U-X, the reason it has an O-U-X at the end, this was a French abbreviation of an Indian name, Nadowesu, which was the name of the Sioux in the Ojibwa language. And the French abbreviated it to the last part of the word, Sioux, and spelled it as they would write the word Sioux, which was S-I-O-U-X. Of course, there were no X sounds in it originally. The word, by the way, is its meaning is disputed, but it may mean something like little snakes. So in many cases, not only is a word spelled weirdly, much more differently than the Indians would have written it out, but the meaning has changed slightly, or it has been somewhat distorted.
Well, and I look around the state of Iowa, Pat, and I think about all of the European names that we decided to pronounce in our own particular way, Madrid, for example. And I can only imagine that the way we say Native American names have very little similarity to how they were originally said.
Oh, yes. Another Iowa place name that is a little bit, has an interesting history is Alamakee County. Now, it sounds like an Indian word, and in one sense it is. There apparently was an Indian trader in the region named Alan or Alex McKee. Now, local Indians referred to him as Al McKee, which we might call him Al McKee, too. But anyway, when the county came to be named in 1847, a friend of Al's in the legislature proposed the name Alamakee, all written together, the way the Indian, more or less the way the Indian said it.
All right, so they were making up what sounded like a Native American name, and
yes.
Today we probably wouldn't bother to question the origin.
Oh, yes, and another one, a kind of similar case, is the town of Osage. Now, there is a tribe named Osage, but in the case of Osage, the town that's in Mitchell County, it was in fact named after a prominent banker named Orrin Sage, who, among other things, gave the town $2,000 and the land to build a public library. And he typically signed his name O. Sage. But undoubtedly, the well-known native name of the tribe, Osage, influenced the selection of that form of his name for the name of the town.
Very interesting. Well,
it wasn't actually named for the tribe.
Right.
Yeah.
I also think about, you know, this is a long tradition at, say, summer camps, that kind of thing. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Americans have a long
Camp
tradition
Weeki
of
watching.
Right, making up words that they think
right.
sound like Native American names. So we probably have a lot of those that have wormed their way into our culture, too.
Yes. Now, as far as Iowa place names, there aren't all that many that are named made up, but they do get twisted terribly. Like, take the name of the Des Moines River, for example. This is the town was named after, well, Fort Des Moines was named after the river and later the town of Des Moines. But I always thought it originated in French and had something to do with Trappist monks, but it doesn't actually. It originated as an Indian word for road. Which roughly sounded like Mekonang, road. Probably the river was called that because they used it for travel.
Right.
But the French mispronounced it grossly, first as something like Moingona, M-O-I-N-G-O-N-A.
Which, of course, is also a place name in Iowa.
Yes. And later, that word was shortened to M-O-I-N for the French, moin. Now, the town on the river was first called Des Moines and later Des Moines because of that French mispronunciation. But as you say, the town of Moingona in Boone County comes from that same Indian name for road, Mekonang, and that was the what it looked like to the French.
Oh, that's fascinating.
You
can join our conversation, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And let's go to Troy on the line in Iowa City, because this is a question we were going to get to for sure this hour, and we'll start it off with you, Troy. Hi, Troy.
Hi. I'm wondering, how is Iowa pronounced? Is it Iowa or Iowa? Or
mm-hmm.
what's the right pronunciation? And also, isn't Des Moines like a Indian word for like shit or marsh? Or
oh,
something?
Hey, Troy. No, thank you. That's not appropriate on our airwaves.
I think I just explained that it comes from an Indian word for road.
Right, you did fully explain that. Let's talk about Iowa.
Yeah, Iowa is the name of a native people who lived in what is now Iowa and Minnesota. Now, the word for the tribe is most often spoken and spelled Iowa, I-O-W-A-Y. So generally when people refer to the language, they call it Iowa. But most often the geographic place is spoken and spelled Iowa. Now, there have been there were times early in the 1800s when the region was called Iowa after the tribe, but later the geographic name settled down to become Iowa. And as for the meaning, scholars haven't actually been able to pin it down with solid evidence, but legend has it that Iowa or Iowa meant sleepy ones or drowsy ones. I can't vouch for that, but there you go.
All right, so the whole idea that it means beautiful land.
Well, no.
Which people like.
Not that I know of. It may evoke images of a beautiful land. Oh, here's another one that's not really Indian. Lamoni. Didn't you always assume that was Indian?
I would, yes.
Well, it's actually a name from the Book of Mormon. So
interesting.
I guess Mormons would know that it's not Indian, but I didn't. anyway, a lot of Iowa counties were named after Indian chiefs or Indian tribes. And I can talk about some of those if you'd like to hear
sure.
those. People
yeah.
who live there might be interested. Maybe they probably already know. But Blackhawk County is named for Chief Blackhawk, who was a famous Sac and Meskwaki warrior of the early 19th century and very renowned. And he was admired by white settlers. And Mahaska County got its name from an Chief Mahaska of the Iowa tribe, and the word for his name was, the meaning of his name was white cloud. Nakiakuk was also the name of a Sac Indian chief. The name literally means running fox or watchful fox. And Winneshiek County was named after Chief Winneshiek of the Winnebago tribe, and Wapello, the town as well as the county, were named for Chief Wapello of the Meskwaki people. And Appanoose County, one of the later counties to enter the state, is named for another Meskwaki leader, Chief Appanoose. And people you probably in your region know that Poweshiek County, which is down the road from you, was also named for a chief of the Meskwaki. The word means either roused bear or he who shakes something off, depending on the source you check. Now, the county seat, Montezuma, was named for the Aztec ruler. You might call him Native South American. And the Poweshiek County town of Deep River, which I always thought was such a lovely name for a town, it's a translation of an Indian word that sounded something like sapoma, that meant deep water or deep place in a stream. And as for places named after tribes, there are some of those too. Pottawatomie, Muscatine, which is not only a place, but it's a street in Iowa City, right?
Right.
Muscatine, Cherokee, Chickasaw, and Sac, as in Sac County and Sac City, are all named after tribes. And as I mentioned, Sac, which is sometimes pronounced Sauk, it means people at the mouth of a river. Although there are some sources that it said people of the yellow earth, while the Meskwaki were people of the red earth. I'm not sure about that. A lot of these meanings are disputed.
Yes, I'm sure.
Yeah.
We have a few other people on the phone right now. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Tim is on the line in Mason City. Hi, Tim.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Good. What's your question?
I'm very pleased to be able to hear Mrs. O'Connor again. She is so knowledgeable, yet self-effacing when it's called for.
Thank you, Cousin Tim.
My pet peeve has to do with English, although I'd be interested to learn if there's a corollary in Native American. It has to do with good versus well. You say, how you doing? And the person responds, I'm doing good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's altruistic or perhaps a little egotistical rather than saying, I'm doing well. I'm doing good. I'm benefiting the world. And even a few weeks ago on Hort Day, talk of Iowa, a fellow called in saying he raised peas from seed and got only 6 out of the 12 to germinate. And the Hort fellow said, well, 6 out of 12 is very good,
mm-hmm.
instead of saying you did very well. And if it's so good, so beneficial, why don't we? I congratulate the man for his effort.
All right. Well,
I hate to disagree with you, because you seem to appreciate me so much. Maybe you won't so much after this, but to say that you're doing good, literally doing good would mean that you were doing good works. But to say that you're good is not incorrect. When someone asks you how you are, you can say I'm well, which would mean that you feel well or that you're healthy. Or you could say I'm good. There's nothing wrong with saying I'm good. As I've written about that several times on my blog, if you want to look up the rationale for it. But I do agree with you that to say you're doing good is a little bit too colloquial. But I'm good is okay. And also to say that getting a certain number of seeds to germinate is good, that's fine as well.
When you say too colloquial.
Yeah, it's a little, yeah, I'm doing good. Yeah, it's, yeah.
All right. Okay, for you.
Yeah.
And for Tim, clearly.
Good. I'm feeling well. Either one of those are okay.
Okay. All right. You can join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Don is on the line next in Iowa City. Hi, Don.
Good morning. I learned this when I was out in the woods this spring looking for kind of a wild onion called ramps.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked it up in the wildflower book, and it said that the Algonquian word for onion field is Shigagu, which got translated into Chicago because that was a very large onion field there.
Mm-hmm.
I cross-referenced that with the American Heritage Dictionary, and they say pretty much the same thing. So
yeah, yeah. So as I said, you know, a lot of the place names, a great many of place names came from Indian terms. I hope to talk about some more of the Iowa ones too. But I did mention the Sac and the Meskwaki, and most of the Native American place names in Iowa are from those two tribes, Sac and Meskwaki. But some other Native tribes also contributed some names, and I don't want anyone out there to feel slighted. Some other place names came from the Dakota or Sioux language, some from Winnebago, some from Iowa, and some from Potawatomi. And a few other place names came from 39 other Indian languages that were spoken outside of Iowa. Now, you may wonder how place names outside of Iowa got names, I mean, place names in Iowa got names from outside, and that's kind of interesting because the settlers who founded Iowa towns, often they named their towns through nostalgia. Many of them had come from places in the East that had Indian names, and this is true of the Iowa towns of Oneida and Nashua. They were named for towns in New York and New Hampshire that were named after Indian tribes. And so it may be that those early settlers were a little bit nostalgic for those towns they had passed through or maybe lived in. And the town of Tioga in Mahaska County is named for Tioga County, Pennsylvania. Now, Tioga is an Iroquois word that's been interpreted as meaning at the forks or swift current. And the county in Pennsylvania was named Tioga, and settlers who moved to the West brought that word with them and named the town in Mahaska County Tioga. So that not everything was actually a native Iowa word that ended up as an Iowa place name. This is also true of place names that were given as tributes to famous Native Americans, and this is true of the towns of Osceola and Oskaloosa. Now, Osceola was named for Chief Osceola, who was a tragic figure in the Seminole Wars in Florida. And Oskaloosa, which means black rain, was a Seminole princess and the wife of Chief Osceola. So they were admired, or there were legends about them among settlers and pioneers. And so
they're names that traveled
those.
A long way.
They traveled a long way.
We'll be back in just a moment. This hour, I'm talking with our English language expert, Patricia O'Connor. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, our English language expert, Patricia O'Connor, is here. She's the author of Woe Is I and a number of other books about the English language. She blogs at grammarphobia.com, and she is here to answer your questions. We've been talking about the origins of words that originally came from Native American languages and became part of modern American English. We've also talked about animal names, food names, place names. If you have questions on that subject, give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number. If you have other English language questions, you can also give us a call. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Ben is on the line next in Des Moines. Hi, Ben.
Hey, I'm actually on 35, and I just went by Alexander, which I'm pretty sure is not a Native American name. But I was curious, we've talked a lot about place names and nouns, but I haven't heard much about verbs. So I'm curious if any verbs from Native American languages have made it into English and why there are so few examples of them.
Gosh, that's a good word. I mean, that's a good question. I don't know of any verbs. And it may be that when the colonists and settlers came to intermingle with Indian tribes, they already had words for the things that the Indians were using as verbs, like to light a fire, to cook, to hunt, to skin an animal. They probably had their own words already, and they didn't need new ones. However, a lot of the things that the Native Americans were introducing to the colonists were names of animals that were unfamiliar to them, or to vegetables or plants, foods, fish, plant, flowers, that kind of thing. So they didn't need the verbs, and so they weren't absorbed into English. That's my guess. I can't account for it otherwise.
Interesting.
Also, we don't seem to have taken into English very many adjectives and adverbs. They all seem to be nouns. So, you know, that's another issue. Now, I'm sure those languages have those, and they're probably still being used. But I know I've read Roger Williams's 17th century book on Narragansett, and he does have words in there for to gather, to pray, to eat, to speak with, all those normal verbs he has in there. And, of course, one would assume that they existed in Indian languages, but we already had those. So I think that's probably why they weren't absorbed into English. It was things that are new, that were new, that got absorbed into English. So there you go. Now, powwow is a verb, too, to powwow. But, of course, that was an English development, and it's now used by many Native Americans, but that development came in English.
Right. We turned it into a verb.
Yes, yes.
Interesting. Well, that's a really good question, Ben. Thanks a lot for your call. Tim in Cedar Rapids is wondering about the origin of the word Okaboji.
Yeah, Okaboji, the origin of it is kind of uncertain, but it may be from a Dakota Sioux word that means place of rest or reeds and rushes. So,
all right.
You know, like a lot of Indian words, when English speakers encountered them for the first time, they may have interpreted them differently. Or they may have said, oh, well, this is such a restful place with all these reeds and rushes. And one person wrote down one meaning and one wrote down the other. So,
And both are certainly accurate.
Probably an expert in the Sioux language could answer that. And I'm not an expert in Native American languages, unfortunately. Wish I were.
All right. Well, let's go back to the phones. Michael is on the line, driving through Pocahontas. Hi, Michael.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Oh, what's your question?
So my mom's always telling me that we got like a 132nd heritage in our family of the Susquehannocks tribe, probably guess from the Pennsylvania territories. And I was wondering if they had any words that were influenced or that influenced the American language.
What was the name of the tribe?
Susquehanna.
Susquehanna.
Yeah, Susquehanna.
I'm sure they did. They were in Pennsylvania, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure they did, but I don't off the top of my head know of any words. But undoubtedly they did contribute some words. I'm sorry I can't. We know they contributed place names, Susquehanna. So
all right.
Are you driving through Pocahontas or are you living in Pocahontas?
I'm just driving through.
Oh, well, Pocahontas, both the county and the town. This is another example of a place name that came from outside Iowa. It was named for nostalgic reasons. It was named for the famous Indian princess whose name means stream between two hills. And the town of Rolfe, R-O-L-F-E, interestingly, was named for her husband. She later married John Rolfe. So it has they have husband and wife names there in Pocahontas County.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And maybe you can, I'll bet there's a way to do a little bit of research about the words.
Susquehanna.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Next, let's go to Gail, who is on the line in Marion. Hi, Gail.
Hi. I just wanted to mention that the Iowa, in their own language, do not call themselves Iowa. In their own language, the name for their tribe is Bohoke.
Ah, okay. Do you know how it got how it was boiled down to Iowa? Was it a shortening?
It is Iowa, or Iowa is actually the Sioux word for the tribe.
Mm-hmm.
So that was what another group of people referred to them as.
Oh,
so.
I see.
Exactly.
Yes, I see.
Gail,
well, that's interesting.
Yeah, and
that.
Actually we have this from Mary. She said, and this is an article I didn't get a chance to read, unfortunately. She said recently in the Des Moines Register there was a story that said there's speculation that the Sleepy Ones reference, which we were talking about with Iowa earlier, resulted from other tribes experiencing the Iowa welcoming ceremony of placing guests on hides that they raised and carried while smoke was used for atmosphere. And maybe it made the guests sleepy. So there are lots of questions, and it's very difficult to go back and actually uncover the meaning behind these words because so much has happened
right. Since
that time, and there's been so much that has been lost culturally and as far as languages go. Here's an interesting story from Renee. She said this is on the subject of Papa Tosipo. And she says, according to Jonathan Buffalo, who we had on this program not that long ago from the Meskwaki Nation, he says this translates into Man's River or Old Man's Creek, which is a creek that runs through Johnson County. Old Man's Creek, the Indians called it Papa Tosipo. For W.F. Smith of Washington Township, says this creek was a hiding place for the old men, women, and children when the Braves went off on the warpath. When the Sac and Fox were ready to make a foray on their upstream enemies, they would send their non-combatants out to the creek for concealment in case they should be worsted in the fight and be pursued down the Iowa River by their enemies. Old Woman's Creek flows into Old Man's Creek, perhaps an even more remote sanctuary.
Ah,
so
interesting.
An interesting story, and there
right. Are
so many stories that get passed
right. Down.
Rick is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Rick.
I would like to go back and visit the Verb area. And I was wondering, we don't actually have Indian names for, but Indian names like Sitting Bull and Count Spinny Coo. It seems like a lot of Indian names have active verbs in them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you had anything about that. And
yeah, they,
my second
like
question,
they would not, generally you don't find a name like Bear. It would be Running Bear or Roused Bear or Sleeping Bear or something more descriptive.
Yeah. That's always an act. It's an active verb within a name.
Yes. Yes, you're right. That's an interesting point.
So, and my other question was, do you have any information on how Atumwa came about to be called Atumwa?
Oh, gosh, Atumwa. You know, that's the one. I think I missed Atumwa. Oh, my gosh.
Well,
I'm sorry.
There's still time. There's
I don't know Atumwa.
All right. Well, if someone else knows about Atumwa, you can give us a call, 866-780-9100. Rick, thank you so much for your call. And here we've got a question or a pet peeve. It's one I do myself that doesn't have to do with Native American words. Lola's on the line in Grinnell. Hello, Lola.
Hello.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I was wondering how the verb to listen to has morphed into let's take a listen.
Oh, right. I wrote about that in
in
my blog a while back. Yeah. Yeah, let me quickly go there. This is not an unusual thing, and it sort of has parallels in take a look. Or take a gander, so that the verb becomes a noun that you're supposed to take. But actually, I've noticed that it's in a lot of TV anchors. When they'll introduce something, they'll say, take a listen.
And we certainly do that on the radio as well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there are only so many different ways to say the same thing. I think that we constantly feel the need to try to make up new ones. We've talked about this with sports analogies in the past as well. But it is a construction that's been around for quite a while.
Right. To have or take a listen. Actually, the take a listen hasn't made it into dictionaries yet, but American Heritage does have give a listen. So that's also treating the verb listen as a noun, as a thing that you either give or you take, which in this case would mean the same thing. To give a listen and take a listen would mean the same thing. Or to be on the listen, that's sometimes been used.
Interesting. And we so often turn nouns into verbs. This is the other way.
Well, in this case, listen has been used as a noun since the 1300s.
Well, that's a relief.
To lose the listen meant to become deaf in Middle English. But also to be on the listen, to have a proper listen, those kinds of things. It has a background. So it's not surprising that it cropped up.
Interesting. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Lola, that may not make it any less annoying to you, but it's good to know that we're not alone, at least. All right. Haley's on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Haley.
Hello.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
So I'm actually a member of the Omaha Tribe, which is the Omaha Tribe of Nebraska and Iowa. And I was wondering, because you talked a lot about how Meskwaki has a lot of influence in the counties, but if you knew if any Omaha words or the Omaha people had any influence in that. I actually know that we're originally Umaha, but they changed it to make it easier to Omaha.
Yeah, that a lot of times names were changed to make it easier for the white newcomers to pronounce, not unusual. But I'm sorry, I don't know of any Omaha words specifically, but I know they're out there.
Well, and Haley, do you know of any that you suspect that maybe you learned about as you were growing up?
Actually, no, not really. And that's why I kind of always thought it was interesting, because the Omahas were on the Iowa side, and the river changed. So they moved to Nebraska. So they didn't move, but the river moved them, basically. And so there's not much influence. I think when people think of Iowa tribes, they forget about Omaha, but They're actually the tribe of Omaha and or of Nebraska and Iowa.
Yeah, that is very interesting. And
yeah.
I'm sure the influence remains. It's just so much has been lost.
Oh, yeah. And undoubtedly, they traded words with the Meskwaki and Sac, I would think, because the Omaha were not only in Iowa and Nebraska. I think they were a bit up in the Dakotas, too, weren't they? Maybe you know about that.
No, I'm not entirely sure.
Oh, okay.
You know, Haley, this hour I've been thinking a lot. There was a book that came out not that long ago about how we use Chief Blackhawk's name everywhere. This is, you know, it shows up on car washes and all kinds of places that really seem improbable. And there are a lot of people that find that to be offensive. And, of course, there have been a lot of controversies about using derogatory terms as the names of sport teams, that kind of thing. But, Haley, this seems kind of cool to take a moment and look at how even if we have completely changed these words in modern American English, it's really, really cool to see how much influence the Native people have on our language. How do you feel about it?
That's a really good question. I think, coming from a Native American myself, I think we're very marginalized in general. And so I think that it's interesting to see that and kind of listening to this and actually knowing, you know, how many words from Iowa counties alone, you know, are influenced from Native Americans. But I still think it's just kind of lingering. I don't think people actually take the time to really think about it and think about that influence. But I mean, looking at the states and looking at, you know, how many states come from Native words, I think it's, for me, I think it's there, but people don't really think about it. And so this is really interesting for me, for people to, you know, start thinking about it and understanding what influence Native Americans have had, you know, now that we're only one down to 1 or 2% of the U.S. population.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
but
Haley, thank you so much for your call.
Many Native American languages are being revived, and there are extensive glossaries and grammars of them, and they're being taught in Native American communities, which is great.
Well, and Pat, just a moment of advice. If you run into a word that you think is of Native American origin, how do you go about figuring it out if you're curious?
Well, I look in the Oxford English Dictionary first. Then I look in other dictionaries, and I go on linguistic sites, and I Google it, and I do that kind of research.
All right.
There are books about Native American languages, too.
So if you dig down a little ways, you can usually probably find some connection, although clearly there are some mysteries that will always remain. Patricia O'Connor, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Patricia O'Connor is the author of Woe Is I and a number of other books about the English language. She blogs at grammarphobia.com. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.